This is Ralph Richardson. Today, I've chosen to present to you a dramatization of a tale by one of the finest of storytellers, Somerset Maugham. I expect that many of you who are listening will have seen some of the films based on his stories. And so, you may recall this tale, which was included in the first of those films, Quartet. In this adaptation, I shall be playing the part of the storyteller, Colonel Peregrine. So here now is Somerset Maugham's tale, The Colonel's Lady. My name is George Peregrine, but this is not so much my story as the story of my wife, Evie. Well, we've been married for some 30 years. I always thought of her as a quiet, unassuming woman, knew how to handle the servants, and was generally well-liked in the village. Our place is in Warwickshire, Langley Manor, first-rate hunting country. We lived a normal country life, or so I thought. It all began one morning at breakfast. I was reading the Times and West had just brought in the letters.
Thank you, West.
Oh, tell Somers I shall want the car at 11, West. I'm going to the agricultural show.
Yes, sir.
What have you got there, a parcel? Here, give it me. No, I hate to see people cutting string.
Thank you.
Seems to be from some publishers. Books, I suppose. Ah, there you are. Yeah, books, but what, they're all the same. What on earth do you want six copies of the same book for? Poetry. Though Pyramids Decay by E.K. Hamilton. E.K.? Well, that's your maiden name. You don't want to say you wrote it?
Yes.
What, poetry?
I'm afraid so.
Extraordinary. Did you never tell me? Well, you are a sly boots.
I didn't think it would interest you very much. Would you like a copy?
Poetry's not much in my line, you know, but oh, yes, yes, I'd like a copy. Take it up to my study and have a look at it. Nicely got up. Quite a rare book. Must have cost you quite a bit to get it printed.
I was lucky. I sent it to a publisher, and he took it. In fact, he paid me a small advance, £25.
You don't say. Really? Well, bless my soul. Like the first notes of an overture, the sun slid down the leaves, embracing everyone with chords and thrills of light. Beloved Galahad, so insignificant yet sweet a dream I had. For dreaming still, I knew the fancy true, since every shadow had the face of you. I don't know what the devil she's talking about. Yes, yes, what is it?
Mr. Bannock.
Oh, sure, I'm in. Oh, good morning, Bannock.
Good morning, Colonel.
I've got those forms for a new barn, but there's some details you'll have to fill in. I put pencil crosses against the questions you must answer. Oh,
thank you, sir. Have you got time to look at that bull, sir?
All right.
Good morning, Bannock.
Good morning, madam.
You off now?
Oh, yes, yes. I've just got to look at this bull that Bannock wants me to buy before I go to the show.
Will you be back for tea?
No. It's the County Agricultural Committee. Look, don't wait dinner for me if I'm late.
No, all right, dear.
Oh, and I read your book.
Did you like it?
Yes, jolly good. Not quite my stuff, you know, poetry, but jolly good.
I'm glad you liked it, dear.
Well, goodbye.
Goodbye, dear.
As a matter of fact, I'd forgotten all about the book by lunchtime. The Agricultural Committee took my mind off it, and it wasn't until the following week that I gave it another thought. So I was going up to town to see Daphne, a girl I was rather fond of. Well, perhaps she was rather more than a girl. She must have been 35 at least, but a jolly good sort, and always good for an evening's fun. After all, a man's entitled to his little bit of fun, once in a way.
Hello, George.
Hello, my dear.
I began to think you weren't coming.
Ah, sorry, Daphne. I've had the dickens of a day. I've been on the bench all the morning. I'm a JP, you know. One of those beastly husband and wife cases. Went on for hours. Well, I missed my train, and I came up on the 4 o'clock.
Then you obviously need a drink.
Well, what should we do? Would you like to have supper at Mario's and then on to the Milroy?
Mm-hmm. That'd be nice. Don't let's stay out too long, though.
All right. How have you been?
Lonely.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just couldn't make it last week. I'm a busy man, you know.
Too busy. There's your wife, apparently, writing books that everybody's talking about.
If my wife had written the book, I'd be the first to know about it, wouldn't I?
Yes, I suppose you would.
Well, let's not waste time on trifles. I'm hungry. I still didn't think very much about it. After all, some people must like poetry, I suppose. But next day, when I called at my club for lunch...
Colonel Peregrine, isn't it? I wonder if you remember me.
Why, yes, of course. The Duke of Haverhill.
We met last year at Goodwood.
Yes, I remember very well.
We were so sorry your wife couldn't come to us for the weekend. We were expecting rather a nice lot of people.
Yes, of course. It was a pity.
Still, I suppose everybody's after her. Better luck next time.
Yes. Well, I hope so.
Good morning, George. How was town?
Oh, same as usual. I got the last train back.
I should have waited up for you.
Oh, not so. Look here, Evie, what's all this about being asked to Haverhill Castle for the weekend and you refusing?
I thought it would only bore you.
Bore me? Well, we've never been asked before, and he's got the finest shooting for miles around.
I didn't think of that. I'm sorry.
I suppose I was asked.
As a matter of fact, you weren't.
Oh. I think it's extremely rude to ask you without asking me.
Well, I suppose they thought it wasn't your sort of a party. The Duchess is rather fond of writers and people like that, you know. Henry Dashwood, the critic, was going, and for some reason he wants to meet me.
Oh. Well, it's very nice of you to refuse, Evie. In the circumstances.
It was the least I could do. Oh, George, my publishers rang up yesterday. They're giving a little party for me on Wednesday. And of course they want you to come too.
Oh, I don't think that's quite my mark, you know. It sounds like a crashing bore.
I wish you'd come. We could go up to London in the morning.
Well, I'm afraid I can't manage that Hunt Committee at 3 o'clock. I tell you what, you make a day of it, and I'll come along in the evening to the party.
Thank you, dear. That would be sweet of you.
Oh, not at all. I've got to be in town on Thursday anyway. Afraid you'll have to look after yourself most of the time.
Never mind. I will.
Following Wednesday, I went up to town for the party given by Evie's publishers. I must say, the most extraordinary lot of people. Men in corduroy jackets, most of them needing a haircut. Men with long cigarette holders. A few of them seemed to be all right, of course, but I was hardly in my element.
Oh, my dear, I had to lock the door of my room when I read it. It made me feel quite naked, if you know what I mean.
Well, I must say, I keep my copy locked up. I wouldn't like my husband to find it. It might give him ideas.
No, that's what I find so fascinating. apparently, her husband doesn't mind at all.
Oh, but he must, surely.
He can't do. He's actually here tonight.
Why, you're not serious.
But I am. Johnny pointed him out to me. I only saw his back, but he's here somewhere. Oh, Maudie, do you know which is poor Colonel Peregrine?
What? But you're standing right next to him, dear.
Oh, Colonel?
Excuse me.
Well, George, I brought the book. Is that all you wanted me for?
Oh, no, no, Daphne, of course not, of course not.
Now, look, George, I'm awfully good at listening to husbands whose wives don't understand them.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, my wife did write it. And it is about the book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was something a young chap said to me in the bookshop. And something I noticed last night.
What did he say?
Something about it being sexy. Hot stuff.
Well, isn't it?
Oh,
George. You don't mean to say that you haven't read it.
Well, as a matter of fact, I've not. I've just looked at it.
Oh, George. You're the end. Honestly, you mean that your wife can write the lushest book since Lady Chatterley, and you don't even trouble to read it?
Well, I... Look, Daphne, you've read it.
Well?
But what's it all about?
Do you want me to tell you? Oh, no, really. George, I'd rather not. You read it for yourself.
No, please tell me. Let's get it over with.
Very well. Remember, you asked for it, so don't hold it against me afterwards. Well, it's a sort of love story, and it's all told in the first person, so you believe it's actually happening when you read it. If you see what I mean. Well, the woman telling the story is a middle-aged woman, and she falls in love with a younger man, much younger. When she first meets him, she likes him. She doesn't believe he could ever be interested in her. Well, not in that way. One day he tells her he's in love with her and asks her to leave her husband and go away with him.
I see. Go on.
Well, she's pretty much in love with him by this time, but she doesn't believe it can last. So she says no. But this doesn't make any difference to the young man. He still keeps on seeing her, and soon they reach the stage where they can't do without each other. So they don't.
I see.
She keeps telling herself it'll all be over in a few weeks, but it isn't. In fact, it gets worse instead of better. And soon they're meeting two or three times a week. In fact, whenever she can manage it without her husband knowing. And then, just when she's sure it's the real thing and she's decided to go away with him, he gets killed.
Oh.
And she just has to go on giving dinner parties and running the house as though nothing had happened. Well, that's all. Except that it makes you feel that it's actually happening to you. It's all so real. I don't mind telling you that when I read it, I spent half the time crying and half the time getting into a state. Well, you know what I mean.
She must have made the whole thing up.
Well, you read it and ask yourself whether anybody could have made it up.
Eve is too much of a lady. She couldn't do a thing like that. Excuse me, Daphne. I must go. I take the book, dear.
Well, aren't you even going to finish your drink?
There was only one person to talk to now, and that was my lawyer. Have you read her book?
Yes. Great success, isn't it? Fancy Evie breaking out into poetry. Wonders will never cease, will they?
It's made me look a perfect fool.
Oh, nonsense. I wouldn't jump to conclusions, George.
Be honest with me. Can you look me in the eye and tell me that you believe that it's a made-up story?
You've no right to ask me a thing like that, George. Ask Evie.
I don't.
Why not?
I'm afraid she'd tell me the truth. Harry?
Yes?
Who was that chap?
I don't know. And if I did, I wouldn't tell you.
I've got to know. I've got to. Now, look here. You have private detectives you employ, I suppose?
Oh, it isn't a pretty thing to put detectives onto one's wife.
It isn't a pretty thing for her to carry on an affair behind my back, is it?
I won't do it, George. Besides, if Evie found out you'd been putting detectives onto her, she'd probably leave you. Do you want that?
Well, no. Why should I? She runs the house perfectly. Never any servant trouble. She's done wonders in the garden. She's splendid with the village people. But how can I go on living with her when she's been unfaithful to me?
Well, you don't know that for certain.
Why on earth did she write that wretched book?
I suppose she had some very poignant experience, and it was a relief to get it off her chest.
Why didn't she have the sense to write it under an assumed name?
Well, she used her maiden name. I expect she thought that would be enough. It would have been if the book hadn't been such an amazing success.
What am I going to do, Harry? What would you do?
Nothing.
Nothing? But I can't overlook a thing like that. I've been made a laughing stock.
Oh, nonsense, old boy. Now, listen. The man's dead. It all happened a long time ago. Forget it. Talk to people about Evie's book. Rave about it. Let them know how proud of her you are. The world moves quickly and people's memories are short. They'll soon forget.
I shan't forget.
Oh, yes, you will.
No, I shan't forget as long as I live. Well, I suppose you're right. It's no good crying over spilt milk. I'll take your advice. You know, the truth is, I don't know what I'd do without Evie. But there's one thing I shall never understand to my dying day.
Well, what's that?
What in the name of heaven did the fellow ever see in her? Thing to be done, to have it out with her. To show her that she deeply hurt me, but that I was prepared to forgive her.
I'm sorry you're angry about the book, George. If I'd known what would happen, I'd never have published it.
What difference would that have made?
Well, it would have saved you from being so annoyed.
Annoyed when a man learns that his wife's been unfaithful to him?
But
when she publishes to the whole world that she's carried on a degrading love affair behind his back, you expect him to be more than annoyed.
George.
Evie, in the 30 years of married life, we've never sunk to vulgar quarreling. But when this thing happened, I was stunned, amazed. These last few days, I've lived in a state of horror and utter shame. Who was this man? Because if who was he?
It was you.
Me? Don't insult me with lies.
It was you. As you were all those years ago. In those days when we first met and you still loved me.
But you said in the book that he died.
He did. The man who loved me died. It was my fault, George. I didn't understand all the things he was fond of. Farming and hunting and shooting. I couldn't give him the children he wanted more than anything in the world. And as time went by, I only had the memory of those few short years when I was happy. I had to write them down. So I might always have them.
But you describe him as a young man, and yourself as old.
I am old. But the man who loved me was young. Memories are always young. George, don't you see that I'm telling you the truth?
Evie. Evie. Oh, my dear.